This is Joe Bob Briggs, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 12th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Spam Risk.
Spam Risk.
No one takes my phone call, Steve.
Is that your new identity when you're calling people?
I call and call and nobody ever picks up, Steve.
I look forward to the sitcom where you are starring as Spam Risk. I thought for sure you were going to say you were Jack Hanna and handling all the animals around the area this week.
No, I'm the guy who calls and no one picks up my phone call.
So who wrangled the zebras? That's what I want to know. We had zebras. We had zebras walking around our neighborhood this week, Chip.
Zebras on the loose, Steve, in Illinois.
It was quite a sight, and thank goodness for social media. Everybody got to report the zebra sightings, along with the wild turkeys, and all of the other fun in our small town.
So the small town had cows last year, like cows showing up in people's backyards.
Uh-huh.
Horses, maybe?
There's frequently horses, yeah. Yeah.
And now zebras, Steve. And now it's zebras. Got more exotic.
And the raccoon. Don't forget about the raccoon this week.
I think there is a group of zebras running around Maryland that they just haven't been able to catch.
And I think they really just need to release the lions to get rid of the zebra problem. Isn't it time for the government to do something about the zebra problem?
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Chip, guess what? Our movie of the week is the best movie of 2021. Muppets Haunted Mansion was released on Friday.
Does it count as a movie?
I am counting it as a movie, despite the fact that it is a TV movie presented only on Disney Plus, and of course, the Muppets being the Muppets, they mention that in the film. They are very understanding that we are not in the theater watching this movie.
Well, did they finally get a special effects budget, Steve?
Yes. Disney money certainly changes the effects of the Muppets. This is definitely Disney folding the Muppets into the Disney chain of life and wanting the Muppets to conform to that Disney brand. This is on brand for the Haunted Mansion for sure.
So Uncle Deadly's in this.
Yes. The number of characters in this movie, Chip, is just unbelievable. I don't even want to necessarily list all of the characters that appear in this movie because they are very quick, very fast little cameos from some of our favorite Muppets through time.
Gonzo is our star.
I would actually argue that this is a Gonzo story. The idea is Gonzo is challenged to spend one night in the Haunted Mansion. But in a lot of ways, Pepe the Prawn has a better storyline than Gonzo. He's a B character in the story, but since Bill Beretta wrote this, Pepe gets a lot of screen time.
And everyone loves Pepe.
I gotta tell you, the wordplay, the punning of this movie is something that I love as a silly adult, and I loved as a silly child, and Pepe the Prawn, with his particular accent and his way of changing words and changing meanings, the puns are phenomenal from Pepe.
So Matt Vogel plays Kermit the Frog.
Yes.
I wonder if he is related to Mark Vogel.
I don't believe that he is related, but Matt Vogel is a friend of the show. He is the one puppeteer on our list that I know personally, And that's one thing that I was very frustrated by this whole show, is my friends, the puppeteers, who have been a part of the Muppets for years, are not in this. Matt Vogel is the only one of my quote-unquote friends that is performing the puppets in this show.
All right, so would you rate this as for a family event? Is this for fans only? What is this?
This is the Muppets as I remember them from the 70s and 80s. This is the Muppets being absolutely family-friendly entertainment with so much wordplay that is strictly for adults. The motions of the puppets are for the kids, the words are for the adults, the situations are right in the middle of both. This is a family-friendly delight. I would say this is a perfect movie, with the only caveat being if Jim Henson and Frank Oz were puppeteering, this would be absolutely my favorite Muppet movie.
On my Facebook feed this week, Jim Henson's letter to his children before he passed popped up. If anybody has not read that, you should read that. That is certainly a glorious letter written for everybody.
This movie is a love letter to the Muppets, just like the Jason Segel The Muppets movie was a love letter to The Muppet Show. This has so many elements of The Muppet Show and the nostalgia of that, added to all of the nostalgia of the Haunted Mansion Disney property. It's perfect. I love this movie.
And speaking of Jason Segel, it is Halloween. It's a good time to revisit Dracula's Lament.
Dracula's Lament. The thing that he did with the Muppets before he was actually working with the Muppets. I do love Dracula's Lament.
What's that? Forgetting Sarah Marshall's where it first appeared?
Correct. That is right. he had it, and he was bound and determined to get it into something, and that's where it got into.
Hey, Steve, Chicago's not the only city that has gangsters.
Because we moved them to Las Vegas, because Las Vegas was founded by Chicago gangsters.
Sometimes you want to go for a show and have a steak. I don't know. Steve, tell us a little bit about the Many Saints of Newark.
Yeah, I got a chance to see this. This is the prequel to The Sopranos. The Sopranos, okay. The Sopranos is maybe the best TV show ever made, Chip. The Sopranos ran on HBO from 1999 to 2007, and it is a great character study. It is a great look at organized crime and anger and drugs and all of the things that go along with organized crime, but it focuses on the individual, Tony Soprano, and how he deals with all of this in his life, family, and how he mentally survives. This prequel goes back in time, and we see a very young Tony Soprano getting brought in to the organized crime family. I like this prequel. I don't love it. The problem with it is that it went through a lot of edits. It went through a lot of reshoots. The storyline is not very clear. It's muddy. There's so many little pieces that happen that are supposed to be nostalgia for The Sopranos. There's so many pieces of the story that happen that don't go anywhere in the story. And it's good. I would not recommend it to anyone who did not love The Sopranos. If you kind of liked it, you'll sort of like this one.
Is this a story that needed to be told?
Ah, that is a great question, Chip. Just like the prequel Star Wars movies, looking at the birth of Darth Vader, did the birth of Tony Soprano need to be told? I can say no.
Well, he was supposed to be the chosen one, Steve.
Yeah, and in The Many Saints of Newark, I don't see how Tony Soprano is the chosen one. I don't see how Tony Soprano even bothered to go into this family business, because he didn't really want to.
Well, don't do it, Anakin. I've got the high ground.
I've got the high ground. Yeah, this very much is that prequel, just like the Star Wars prequels. I would skip this one unless you absolutely love The Sopranos. And if you love The Sopranos, rewatch The Sopranos. The headlines this week have been that HBO is seeing a huge run-up on rewatches of The Sopranos because it's that good.
Well, as a person who has not watched The Sopranos, maybe it's a good time for me to pick it up. But Steve,
I've been telling you that for 8 years.
I was going to say, Steve, I've been busy watching a comic book adaption that's on Hulu and FX.
Uh-huh. I've been watching it, too. This is why The Last Man, like you said, it's a comic book come to life. This is a brutal post-apocalyptic world where there's only one male. All of the other males of every species on Earth died in one horrific moment in episode one. We're now through episode seven, and what do you think about this one?
Well, I have absolutely enjoyed this. This is a story of a man and his monkey.
BJ and the Bear? Why don't they remake good shows like BJ and the Bear?
I'm thinking more along Every Which Way But Loose.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, back to the good Clint Eastwood as opposed to the really grumpy Clint Eastwood.
Get off my lawn.
So the premise is that all the males in Earth have died. For some reason, this one man has survived. And this is about a society basically rebuilding when that happens. And it is a beautiful premise for a story and a beautiful exploration of how humans interact with other humans.
There is so much metaphor for what we do in our world, that brutality, that individualism, that group, that society, all of those things are wrapped into the story. And the cinematography of this is spectacular. I am enjoying watching this so much. I do have one thing. Episode 6 was titled Weird Al is Dead. I take issue with that. If Weird Al didn't survive, I wouldn't want to survive either.
Good point, Steve. Good point. This is a nice exploration. Is it the best? It's not the best, but certainly is very good. And I think there is kind of some wish fulfillment when you're watching apocalyptic stuff, that somehow everything would get easy if we could just wipe out this element of society. For this one, it's males, and it shows that no, life is pretty complicated, and we all kind of work together for this. And you know, all the things that would go on during that time. If you wanted to watch it, you could watch it through Hulu, FX. And I would say, so far, I would give this 60 out of 100. So this is pretty good.
I would suggest this to just about everybody who enjoys that analysis of that metaphor of post-apocalyptic storytelling, but it is brutal. The brutality has ramped up in the subsequent episodes from the first one. Just be aware of that. You got a chance to see Dave Chappelle, The Closer. This is the third Dave Chappelle special on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're allowed to talk about this, Steve. There's a lot of cancel culture going on because of this this presentation. It should be noted that the purpose of a comedian is to hold a mirror up to society to show some absurdities. The comedian that's performing and the human that is not performing, they don't have to be the same person. I do think Dave Chappelle is a very interesting person, made a very interesting argument as a performance artist. I enjoyed watching this because of that. It is definitely designed to make you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And if you're a person who enjoys a very thoughtful person, as far as Dave Chappelle, who is willing to go out there and just show some of the absurdities of society, then I think that you will, I shouldn't say enjoy this. You'll get through this. It is interesting. Dave Chappelle, along with George Carlin, I do think they certainly provide interesting fodder to think about.
stand-up philosophy. I think stand-up comedy should be that realm where we get the philosophy of the day. We think about these issues. We think about what we're doing and why we do it. And Dave Chappelle is very good at pointing out what we're doing and why we're doing it, and to give that thoughtful idea of, are we doing it for the right reasons, or is there something else behind it? And you step away from a Dave Chappelle thinking more than from a lot of comedians.
I think so too. This is certainly not going to the Jay Leno show. This is certainly going to something far edgier. Mm-hmm. Anyway, regards to that, Steve, it is Halloween time, and Illinois has to play its part.
Yes, you got a chance to see a documentary this week called The Creature from Big Muddy, an Illinois Bigfoot legend. Paul, your father is in great danger.
So Creature from the Big Muddy, an Illinois Bigfoot legend, was released in February. Interestingly enough, Steve, Valentine's Day was when it was released. It is currently playing on Amazon Prime. It is concerning Murfreesboro, Illinois in the 1970s, mm-hmm. and even today, by the way. Murfreesboro, Illinois, for those who are not familiar with it, if you went down to the southern part of the state towards St. Louis,
like, and then 6 hours, uh-huh.
and sort of went towards the middle part, maybe below Carbondale, mm-hmm. You're going to find Murfreesboro. It is similar to maybe Kentucky, mm-hmm. Tennessee, Missouri. Certainly very rural area. I left this presentation thinking, is this an invitation to come visit the area? Like, somehow it's like, we've got a Bigfoot, come see it, possibly. But there sounds like that it could be a hoax. It sounds like it could be real. Regardless, it was a Bigfoot presentation that takes place in Southern Illinois with all the interesting
characters. Uh-huh. Murfreesboro is an area full of characters. Very different lifestyle from the northern part of Illinois. Let me explain. It's very different down there.
Well, I, as a person who lives in the Chicago area, Steve, I don't think I would shout that from the rooftops down there. You city folk may not understand the rural lifestyle.
Precisely. That is precisely the attitude. When I've been in Southern Illinois, I am an outsider, even though I'm still in Illinois. Illinois is a vast array of humanity, I'll tell you that much.
So 35 out of 100. If you want to watch it, you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
There you go. Opening this week, maybe there's some movies that'll get better scores on the Chip-O-Meter. The first one is Halloween Kills, the sequel to Halloween from, 3 years ago now?
Well, I guess so, Steve. Continuing the franchise that mm-hmm. will never die, Steve.
Aha! There's your theme. Michael Myers will never die.
And what do we have? We have Jamie Lee Curtis coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from True Lies.
Still Laurie Strode from the original Halloween. She is still doing it and still an amazing actress. I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
And Anthony Michael Hall is in this?
They dug up Anthony Michael Hall.
From 16 Candles, Steve. From more, John Hughes. He came down from Shermer to be part of it.
There is no Shermer in Illinois. Anthony Michael Hall has been doing, he's been doing work since then, just so you know. He's an adult now. If you haven't been paying attention to the career of Anthony Michael Hall, he did the Dead Zone series. So he's not unfamiliar with horror. I look forward to this Halloween movie. I am not a fan of horror, but I am a fan of nostalgia. Jamie Lee Curtis loves to make these movies. She is excited about bringing this one to the screen, and I am also excited to see this one.
Hey, Steve, Ridley Scott has a new film.
Yes, and it has two view askew actors in it, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, back again together in The Last Duel.
Matt Damon.
Poor guy. That poor guy. He's been to Mars, Chip. Give him a little respect. He's been to Mars. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, I look forward to Ridley Scott giving us this knights and kings and dueling. This is going to be great.
Steve, there's going to be a time travel film, and it looks like it's going to star Aaron Burr.
All I can think of, the only thing I know about Aaron Burr, even though I have seen Hamilton on stage, the only thing I know about Aaron Burr is the peanut butter commercial where the guy said, Aaron Burr, with peanut butter in his mouth. Yes, you're right, Chip.
So kids, you're going to have to look that up.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Leslie
Odom Jr., you're right, Chip, from Hamilton the Musical, is starring in Needle in a Time Stack. This is a time travel lost love story, and it seems to me that this is going to be a very interesting twist on the idea that we are going to see Orlando Bloom and Leslie Odom Jr. battling for the love of one person, and one of them has time travel and is trying to change history. I look forward to Needle in a Time Stack.
One's good in a duel, and the other is an elf.
Good. Coming up this week on Apple TV Plus, there's another documentary, another music one. Ooh, this one's The Velvet Underground. Tell us all about that.
So the Velvet Underground was a music band back in the 60s, worked with Andy Warhol, Lou Reed, John Cale were part of it. Very influential. Many people who, I guess, know music may know a few of the songs. But I would say most of us do not know the music of the Velvet Underground. But because it was associated with pop art movement, it certainly has legs and has influenced a lot of the bands that you do know. Apple TV Plus is typically hit and miss. We'll see if this one's good.
Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. You have been reading about Finland. Finland, it's the country for me.
Is that a fish slapping song, Steve?
Yeah, it's the fish slapping song. Thank you for knowing that, Chip. You win this week's Too Much Scrolling. Thank you very much. You didn't identify my Bigfoot quote earlier, but that's all right. This week you read The Nordic Theory of Everything, In Search of a Better Life. This is by Anu Partanen, a Finnish journalist.
It is, and this is a really interesting book. I'm very glad I read it. It came up on my feed as a suggested book. And if you think advertising doesn't work, Steve, well, I ended up buying it. And I ended up reading this. And the idea was, this is a Finnish person, a person from Finland, who moved to the United States. And some of the stresses that she experienced being an outsider moving to the United States, that she feels that could be alleviated if we at least adopted or thought about how the Finnish people, how the Scandinavians viewed how to live a life, what a life should be, what a happy life should be, what a well-functioned life could be. And this has been kind of an interest to me because I have been, I don't know, over the last year, studying a little bit more of the Scandinavian countries. Yeah, Steve.
Just so you know, that was code in the Blues Brothers for being in prison for a year, was a tour of the Scandinavian countries. So, just so
a
you know.
A tour that, well, Steve, it was not.
Your study of Scandinavia was different than Jake Blues.
So let's talk about a few of the things that the Finnish culture does that she feels would alleviate some of the stress of the everyday person. And this is what I think the point of why this book is an important read, to kind of reassess how you think of society. Now, if you've been following Too Much Scrolling for, I don't know, the last 8 years, you should know that I'm pretty, I'm a classical liberal, which is libertarian in my thoughts. I typically look at market-based solutions, and I think they're the proper, it certainly has built the West into a very wealthy area, and certainly the United States has benefited from this tremendously. Now, I'm not suggesting that there couldn't be solutions that I'm listening to that are not, they're just, that I'm not finding in this book. This book is incredibly thought-provoking. Is there a better way of looking at your life? And one of the things that in the United States we do is we put our health care in the hands of our employers. Our employers, and this came out of the Great Depression, by the way, mm-hmm. when Roosevelt limited what salaries could pay, but companies started offering benefits. Well, that certainly was a solution for the moment to that. But today's society, it's really tough because we've got a whole group of people who just don't get preventative health care. And if we're looking at that and we recognize some of the challenges we have in that, and we also recognizing some of the challenges small businesses have to provide health care to their employers and things of that nature, healthcare prices continue to escalate. The United States certainly does spend a lot of money per person. There could be a better solution. And I'm not saying that the state should come over and now regulate it and run healthcare. What I am suggesting that the idea that your health insurance is tied to your employment doesn't work real well for today's society. And we may need to find a better way of doing that. And if you knew that healthcare was just part of your life, you know, if you got the flu, you went over to the local clinic or whatever to work with your doctor or something like that, that was much better than if you didn't have to shuffle through whatever your health insurance from your particular employer or your lack of health insurance from your particular employer does. I think that she makes a very good case that we should rethink whether our health care should be employment-based. It's by just living in your area, paying taxes, and you know, we can find market-based solutions. There's nothing in a market-based capitalism that states you can't have a single payer. It basically says that prices matter and there should be competition underneath it. And not to go too deep into this, I've thought about this quite a bit. There's a difference between health care and health insurance. Mm. And I think that we miss what that means. If Steve's in an accident and blows out his knee and has to go for an emergency surgery, that's insurance. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is Steve has his knee's wearing out. He needs to get it replaced and he's got time to shop around. You can't shop around in emergency situations.
Right.
No heart attack victim is going to go, you know, I really should shop around for this. It doesn't work that way. That's an emergency situation. And then, you know, we have a whole bunch of stuff that's just general healthcare. And, you know, this book's not going through all that point. But my point is that there is nothing in a capitalist society that prevents market-based solutions. But there should be a more elegant way of looking at this. She certainly makes a case of how this uncertainty and how being tied to an employer based on healthcare doesn't serve any person well. It just adds a lot of stress to life. And one that you're probably interested in, Steve, would be her thoughts on schooling and either from, you know, the K-12 as we do here in the U.S. and even college schooling and how the Finnish approach schooling, and it's very different than how the United States does. In the United States, we use a lot of standardized tests. We want to measure whether the students are working at a particular level and all that. Once again, she's suggesting that that's not very helpful mm-hmm. for teachers that it's very difficult to, you know, because you're given the students you're given, right?
And as teachers, we've been saying this for a very long time. We don't make widgets. We don't count how many widgets we made on Wednesday. We are educators. We are giving these kids something that is sometimes not measurable. Our frustration in education in the United States is the part of our society that needs to measure our effectiveness. How do you measure the effectiveness of a teacher? To bring it down to a number, to have a standardized test where we are measuring our abilities based on students' abilities seems out of whack to a lot of teachers.
Well, it certainly creates an incentive for the education system here in the United States, because why not teach to the test as opposed to teach to the individual and help the individual learn how to learn, if that makes sense?
Absolutely.
So what's the point of this? You know, how can we make young people into happy, people who, I shouldn't say happy. Happy is not the best measurement of everything, but certainly people who are comfortable with who they are and are willing to follow their interests, and by their interests, hopefully being able to be something that they can create a living on. Mm-hmm. And this is, once again, a wonderful challenge to how we look at education here in the United States, the burden it places on the parents and on the teachers.
And the students.
Well, think about how much universities cost in the United States. If we could figure out a way to work and alleviate the cost of that, that was a young person's decision to go to a higher education, whether it's a trade school, whether it's a university, or college. It certainly could be some other way of doing this. And what she's suggesting is, if healthcare and a stipend is provided to young people as they get their training, they're not quite, they're adults in the sense that they are adults, but they're not adults because they don't have the wisdom of adulthood yet. I mean, we're all looking for that still, but is there a better way of considering this tweener stage to moving to being the future parents, the future productive units of society? And that's a terrible word, by the way. And recognizing that, you're right, we're not widgets. The society is not a machine. Society is individuals. And what can we do to help them be free and to live their lives in a way that provides, I don't know, the proper amount of nurturing, the proper amount of growth, and all that other part. I think that any person who reads this book will be challenged. Once again, that doesn't mean the Nordic way or the Finnish way is the proper way, but she asks great questions and certainly should have your mind move in a very positive way to think about life. And to think about how we should view young people, how we should view the aging, and how we should work with each other in society. I highly recommend this book to thinking persons, and I am very glad I read it.
Nice. That is The Nordic Theory of Everything in Search of a Better Life by Anu Partanen.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Chip, are you on Facebook?
Steve, that's my water cooler.
That's all
I mean,
you
as
do.
As a self-employed person, I have no water. And for 20 years, I do not have a water cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So when I take a little break, I would typically go over and anyway, Facebook is my water cooler.
It's where you have your people to talk to about issues. I get that.
You can share your family photos. You can read about a subject. Certainly, it sounds like they lead you to your subjects that you want to read about.
Hmm.
But Steve, were you there for the blackout?
Were you there? Where were you on October 4th, Chip? Do you remember the 6 hours where Facebook was unavailable and all of the people had no way to communicate with each other?
Well, it really has become sort of the yellow pages and white pages. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're using the terms from the previous generations that young people may never really understand. Right. And to have that service down, once again, it's a free service. Mm-hmm. You know, what can you complain about?
That you're the product. When it's a free service, you are the product. That's what I can complain about.
Well, mm-hmm. certainly Congress has pointed that out pretty well. And mm-hmm. Certainly the whistleblowers have stated that pretty well also.
Yeah, it was a big week for Facebook on that, huh?
Certainly Facebook has been in the news. And yeah. Follow us on Facebook, by the way. Too much scrolling, or just do hashtag TMS Halloween and get all your favorite Halloween music.
My mother emailed me on October 4th. Something happened to my Facebook and I can't get on it. And I was like, no, Mom, it was the whole world. Facebook is shut and it was closed for business for 6 hours. This was a programming error. An engineer somewhere typed in the wrong thing and two fail safes failed and Facebook was off the internet for 6 hours.
That is interesting. Certainly it disrupted a lot of people and you recognize what a connection it is mm-hmm. because what your mother experienced is not the only person who was thinking there was something wrong mm-hmm. And who did not recognize that the site was down. There's no real way sometimes of telling whether a site is down without down like detector. Googling it.
Downdetector.com was lit up on October 4th with reports of Facebook being down.
Steve, speaking of different companies out there that are on the web, YouTube seems to have decided they're going to start removing content.
And the question that we need to ask is, should they and do they have the right to remove certain content?
Well, that is there's your interesting question, because initially, it's a place to put information, and no one wants to have, when I say misinformation, no one wants to listen to racist rants or any number of things going on. But at the same time, your company can be associated, which Alphabet, Google, certainly is associated with YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so R. Kelly's videos were taken down after his conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That seems terrible. All of a sudden, the data out there is gone, mm-hmm. but from, you know, objective person, you're thinking, oh, well, you know, that's a bad person. We don't want to have it available. Mm-hmm. And then as another objective person on the other side, you're going, well, now that information is lost and can go somewhere else.
The idea of keeping that history of this person who is a convicted person at this point, can we still learn something from what he was offering? And the question that I've been asking for my whole lifetime is, how much do we separate the artist from the art? Can I admire an artist who was a jerk? How much, where is that line? I don't want to associate with someone who is committing offenses like R. Kelly has been convicted of. I definitely don't want to support
pedophilia,
him.
Steve. Pedophilia. And then, by the way, that's Michael Jackson, too. Is Michael Jackson step on?
Same category. Can I admire Michael Jackson, the artist, without supporting his family financially because I disagree with his lifestyle choices? I've struggled with this my entire life.
Well, they've also, when I say they, YouTube has also removed anti-climate change information. And also has removed politicians from their website. So once again, at what point does it become censorship?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, no one says that you can go into a Sears and say whatever you want to in their store. Mm-hmm. So this is their turf as far mm-hmm. as the on the web. But at the same time, if you're shutting down a politician's website or a dissenting view from what is the accepted view, are you preventing misinformation in that moment or are you censoring?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that this is a tough battle to mm-hmm. win. How do you show that you're you're open to the Wild West when you are shutting down stuff. You know, it's one thing to, you cheer for the Bears and I cheer for the Panthers. Well, there's no losers there. But what if it comes down to an argument over...
The Bears are losers.
But what if it comes down to just two groups that just have a different idea on how something should be?
Mm-hmm. Where's that conversation?
Yeah.
Where is that point that we can have a human conversation over something that we really truly believe, and can we be proven wrong if we're just not going to talk about it?
And I say all of that because with full knowledge that there are public relations groups, there are countries out there purposely putting up misinformation.
Right.
And so now you have propaganda you got to put through there. This is not an easy policymaking moment for a company, but what you certainly don't want to do is have typically governments coming in and with a heavy hand limiting innovation, mm-hmm. because they feel like they've been slighted.
Yeah. Between these two stories, between Facebook and YouTube, I think it's time to make sure that everybody has a voice and they have their ability to share their thoughts, regardless of whether they're good or bad, right or wrong. Get your own website, people. If you have something interesting to say, the people will find your website.
And it certainly seems ripe for a competitor to YouTube to come in. Come into play.
And
it will be cowboyish. I mean, yep. Certainly on the Wild Web. Steve, let's go with things that may or may not be real.
Welcome to Fast Food Talk on Too Much Scrolling. This week, Chip, Impossible Nuggets are coming to Burger King locations.
Well, there you go, Steve. If you're in Des Moines, Iowa, Boston, Massachusetts, or Miami, Florida, just go be on the lookout.
Go fake to Burger food. King.
Fake food's coming your way.
Fake food. Fake food at the fast food. Who expected fake food at fast food? Oh my goodness. Impossible Nuggets from the Impossible company that made Impossible Whoppers and Impossible Burgers. And they're starting a new phase where they're making not chicken, chicken. And you can find it at Burger King this week. Hopefully these will come to our local Burger King. If we're going on the pattern that was established before, they introduced the Impossible Whopper in select restaurants, and then 4 months later, they were in every Burger King across the country. So I look forward to the fake chicken that I can get at Burger King.
Well, there you go. No one said it was healthy, Steve.
Oh, it's no, just nobody. Plant-based. Nobody said that. Nobody.
Steve, if you're a teacher this week, is there anything that our favorite Chicago-based hamburger place is offering?
Yes, here's your Christmas bonus, teachers. You can go to your local McDonald's across the country this week and get a free thank you breakfast. Every morning on my way to school, I will be stopping at my McDonald's and getting healthier.
A little Egg McMuffin to get it started, Steve?
The Eggs Benedict of breakfast sandwiches. Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, loved Eggs Benedict, and he wanted to make Eggs Benedict something that was portable, and he came up with the Egg McMuffin. And this week, teachers, you can have one for free every morning.
What about our group read that's coming soon?
Yeah, coming up the next couple of weeks, you should join us, as you have for so many Halloweens in the past. Our Halloween group read this year is The Last Werewolf by Glenn Duncan. This is from 2011. It's a grown-up book about werewolves.
Did you say adult? Is this an adult story, Steve?
I did not say adult. I said this is a grown-up story. This is got situations in it that are very adult. There you go. Adult situations. Better?
Sexy werewolves, Steve.
Sexy werewolves. This one, I'm excited to discuss this one on October 26th with Professor Pamela Bedore. We would love for you to read along with us. Grab your copy of The Last Werewolf. We will discuss it on the 26th.
Some people liken this.
You're trying that joke a second week, huh? It didn't work out last week. That's a McDonald's reference. I'm liking it. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
and make the same joke. Yes. If we would love to hear from you, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Send us an email, toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasselblad.
We'll see you in the future.